Now, in a new book, our next guest takes us on a journey to what he calls a strategic and mathematical wonderland. The Price is Right is the longest-running game show in television history, behind 60 Minutes. It would be the second longest-running show, period, in its more than 50-year run. Thousands of contestants have had the chance to win big and small. Turns out there's a lot of math behind the games on the show, and that can tell us something about our own real-life decision-making. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you watch The Price is Right, or did you back the day? Have you been watching for years, decades? What are your armchair game strategies that you think would help you win? What's a mistake that you yell at the TV when Price is Right contestants make? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Justin Bergner blogs at Pop Culture Math. He's the author of the new book, Solving the Price is Right, How Mathematics Can Improve Your Decisions on and Off the Set of America's Celebrated Game Show. Justin Bergner, come on down. You're the next guest on Central Time.
Thanks so much, Rob. Pleased to be on the show today.
Now, you are a fan of math and how it plays out in pop culture. What drew you to The Price is Right?
Sure. Like a lot of people in my sort of generation, I'm in, you know, mid-40s. I grew up watching The Price is Right during, you know, summers and, you know, snow days. And when I went to college at Yale, I graduated with a degree in economics and mathematics back in 1998. And I focused on game theory on the economic side and probability theory on the mathematics side, which gel very well with the show. And I thought about attending, you know, graduate school to get an advanced degree in economics and focus on game theory. But I chose to enter the business world instead. And I don't regret foregoing the academic path, but I always yearned to leave my mark in the world of game theory, which came together with this book idea shortly after college. I started working on it in 2000, briefly when I was between jobs using VHS recordings. I then found employment quicker than expected and tabled the idea for the next 18 years, beginning it again in 2019. So ultimately, writing this book was a consolation prize to myself of sorts for not going down the academic path, and an opportunity to share my love of game theory and probability theory with the world and with fans of the show.
And there's so much you write. It's a strategic and a mathematical wonderland. So much math and game theory behind the decision-making on The Price is Right. Can you give us a sense of how rich this show is with this kind of thinking?
Sure. So yeah, there are four major parts of the show, as you know, viewers are aware. There's the contestants row bidding, where four contestants bid on the item up for bids, with the contestant who's closest to the actual retail price without going over coming up to play a pricing game. Then there are the pricing games, of which there are 77. Those are not game theory related because it's just you and the game. You're not actually competing with the other contestants like you are in contestants row bidding. Then there's the showcase showdown, where you spin the big wheel to get closest or exactly a dollar and one or a combination of two spins to decide which of the three players in the first half of the show and the second half of the show go to the showcase. And that's very much like a pure mathematical game theory exercise. And then there's the showcase, where the winners of the showcase showdown bid on attractive sets of prizes, usually valued between 20 and 40,000, at least back in a couple of years ago, seasons 47 to 48, which I use as a data set for my book. And that turned out to be a very sort of rich and interesting area for some conclusions as well. You know, ultimately, there's a lot of interesting math and game theory, but I would say that two-thirds of the improvement that contestants probably could create versus what's observed on the show is related more to behavioral shortcomings, and then the other one third is related to, you know, strategy and math optimization. So it's really a combination of, you know, behavioral shortcomings and, you know, mathematical limitations that cause contestants to come up short in different parts of the show.
Well, let's check out this key moment. It's going to happen, I believe, nine times in every show. The visit to contestants row, where people come on down. Here's a listen.
The sewing machine goes to whoever bids closest to the actual retail price without going over. Good luck, everybody. Wendy, how you doing? You're first.
$550.
Thank you, Christopher.
$699, Drew.
$699. Thank you very much, Julia.
$750.
$750. Thank you, Sandra.
$751.
Actual retail price, $3,148.
All right. Sandra, come on up. Let's get into the game theory of contestants row six times per game, of course. This illustrates two things. First of all, the strategy of bidding $1 higher than the previous high bid if you're in that fourth position.
Right. So this example is perfect for a lot of the observations I draw in my book, because the three areas where contestants come up short is in underbidding on the item up for bids, mainly due to a fear of going over, but also just due to, you know, being more familiar with sales prices or the item being unfamiliar, like a sewing machine. You know, and secondly, there's this notion of anchoring where the first contestant to bids low and then the other contestants follow. And then third is this notion of, you know, broadening your bid to actually create a bid that when the dust settles, you know, captures a fair portion of the number line over which you could win over. So here for the sewing machine, you see a low first bid and you see the second and third bidders also bidding low. And then the fourth bidder just comes in and bids $1 over the highest price. And so, you know, if you look back over seasons 47 and 48, which was my data set, you know, 53% of the time, the highest bid won, and 64% of the time when the last bidder tabled the highest bid, as occurred here, that contestant would win when they were bidding in the favorable last position. Of course, the final bidder should always bid $1 or a couple dollars if they want to be nice over one of the prior bids, or if they feel that all bids have gone over a bid $1. So this example is really perfect for, you know, what we observe most frequently in terms of the bidding sequences.
All right, this probably means I'm a big nerd, but now, Justin, I want to see an alternate version where all four people make a sealed bid. You know, they write it down and reveal it at the same time and see how that changes the strategies. Like, how could that shake up the game theory?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very different game, even though it seems very similar. You know, in that situation, and I sort of briefly allude to it in my book, you know, what contestants want to basically do is, you know, choose sort of a random number within sort of the sort of call it lower, you know, maybe two-thirds or three-quarters of the reasonable portion of the number line. So it's interesting on the show, the first bidder who has very little idea as to how to bid strategically often just tables his or her best guess with, call it a small discount or margin of safety, you know, not to go over. And that sort of is what you would expect sort of the average bid to look like in a sealed bid situation.
We're talking to Justin Bergner about his new book, Solving the Price is Right, How Mathematics Can Improve Your Decisions On and Off the Set of America's Celebrated Game Show. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Now, are you or have you been a fan of The Price is Right? Do you have a question about a particular game and the strategy behind it or thoughts on it? And outside of game shows, do you feel like you assess probabilities and odds in your daily life? For better or worse, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Justin Bergner, author of the new book, Solving the Price is Right, How Mathematics Can Improve Your Decisions On and Off the Set of America's Celebrated Game Show. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of the show? Hey, anybody out there been on The Price is Right? Love to hear from you. If so, do you have questions about the strategies behind the different games and events on The Price is Right? Join in at 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Okay, Justin, we heard, you know, the that first thing that people do on the show, Contestants Row, people often guess low. There's consistent badness there. But on the Showcase Showdown, you write, where you spin the wheel, you're trying to get 100. You did the math on optimal strategies, and it turns out contestants actually just their gut instinct or whatever, they do pretty well at optimizing.
Yeah, it's interesting. They, you know, individuals have a pretty good innate sense of probability. It's probably, you know, an evolutionary selected trait. you know, the contestants, if you're bidding first, you should, you know, not spin again if you are 70 cents or higher. If you're bidding second, you should not spin again if you get a spin of 55 cents or higher on your first spin, presuming you've, you know, overtaken the first spinner. And most contestants do pretty well. I mean, I think the second spinner might be a little bit too aggressive in spinning, not realizing they only have to beat, you know, one subsequent spinner, and the first spinner might be a little bit too conservative, not realizing they have to beat two subsequent spinners. But yeah, overall, most people make the right choice, and it leads to sort of very much, at least results that are very, you know, similar to a simulated, you know, set of outcomes.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hello there. I have another game show that also plays with numbers on Jeopardy, especially Final Jeopardy, where an answer is posed and the three contestants have to guess which is the right answer, but they also have to wager whatever portion of their current winnings to find out if they've wagered enough to win, because they have the highest total number.
Interesting. Interesting point, Cyril. Yeah, at Final Jeopardy, Justin, you've got to guess not just how confident am I that I'm going to get this right, how much to bid myself, but also how much are other people going to bid and how much are they think I'm going to bid? And then we're in the game theory, right?
Right. No, it's a really good game theory question. I'm not, Cyril, thank you for the question. I'm not the expert on Jeopardy. I think there are some experts on Jeopardy that have either written a book or written sort of substantial sort of articles on how to best tackle the Final Jeopardy bidding. Very interesting show, very interesting game theory problem. But I can't say I'm an expert in it, unfortunately.
Cyril, thanks a lot for the call. Justin, there's so many subgames, and you write about them and strategies. What to you, as you started to break down the, you know, the one-off games on Price is Right, what was the tastiest challenge for you when it came to math?
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of games that were sort of very probabilistic in terms of figuring out what you should do, like Let Them Roll, where you roll five dice with three cars on three of the six faces and $3 values in the other three faces, and you can decide whether or not to stop and take cash or roll again, or Spelling Bee, where you're offered cash, or you can go on and continue trying to spell a car, C-A-R, with the letter C-A-R. So there are all sorts of, you know, trade-offs in a lot of the car games as to whether or not to keep the cash or play on for the car, which, you know, become very specific probability problems. I think there are a lot of interesting games as well that speak to people's behavioral biases. So I come up with a couple terms for some of these. So like strategic patience, contestants in a number of games, including range game, that's too much in card game, tend to stop the price meter or sort of price in the process of increasing the price towards, you know, the value of the prize too soon. And most of the time when they lose, you know, whether it's an easy or a hard game, they end up losing by stopping too soon. I think that has a lot of interesting, you know, real world analogies to it.
You look for different examples like that, Justin, of examples in the game that might inform us in real life. You actually mentioned one earlier, the anchoring effect, where we have no clue what the number of something should be, a cost or whatever the number. Somebody throws out a number. It could be a random number, and that brings our brain into that vicinity. How important is it for us to be aware of those kind of biases in our mind when it comes to assessing values of things?
Oh, I think it's very important. I mean, it affects us in multiple aspects of life. I mean, the example that's most, you know, familiar to me as someone who's in the world of finance is, you know, buying a stock, it goes down, you wait until it comes back to your purchase price to decide to sell it, even though that's a completely arbitrary, you know, number that you're anchoring to. So it's something we're all very guilty of, some people more than others. And it shows up on the show like it does in lots of other areas of life.
Now, people on The Price is Right, you know, we could sit back and look from our TV, you know, the other side of the TV, and we're not under pressure, right? We're analyzing their decisions. How much do you think the excitement and maybe being on the clock affects people's ability to assess these things and make good probability adjustments, judgments quickly?
Oh, sure. I definitely think it matters. I mean, in this notion of strategic patience or not waiting, you know, for the price to go up to the value of the prize in range game, or that's too much. It definitely affects people on the show, but it affects people in real life when they have more time. I mean, in a personal finance decision, buying a house, we find a house we like, it's listed on the market. And instead of waiting, you know, 4 to 6 weeks for the seller to potentially lower the price and then negotiate against a lower price, we sort of get anxious and we act too soon. We negotiate against the initial list price and probably often pay more than we should for a new home purchase. So the time, I think, definitely exacerbates a lot of these shortcomings, but it doesn't mean that they don't exist when we have more time on our hands.
All right, just 20 seconds. I'm giving you the clock pressure, Justin. What game would be the most fun for you to play on The Price is Right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I like the game Hot Seat, where it's somewhat complicated, but you have to guess higher or lower for 5 items. And then based on whether or not you're correct in those guesses, you can win up to $20,000. It involves math. It involves knowing what the prices of the prizes should be. And it involves knowing when to stop and keep playing for more money. So it's a lot of fun.
Justin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rob.
That's Justin Bergner. His new book is Solving the Price is Right, How Mathematics Can Improve Your Decisions on and Off the Set of America's Celebrated Game Show. He also blogs, by the way, at Pop Culture Math.